Welcome to the August 17th, 2018, Season 1, Episode 2, Blue Wave Podcast, Seahawks Side. I'm here with my cohort, Sean Morris.
Hey guys, how's it going?
And today we're going to talk about the Seahawks game, preseason game number one against the Colts. Seahawks lost the game, of course, for those that are paying attention, 17-19. So what we're going to do first is we're going to go over the two scoring drives from the first quarter, from when the starters were in, because who cares about the backups? We can talk about them, but we want to focus on when the starters were in the game, how they looked. Of course, both teams are running base defense, base offense, so it comes down to who can execute better rather than not having good schemes. So we're going to lead off with the Colts, okay? And what I'm talking about here is the Seahawks defense. So sorry, Tom, we're not going to talk about the Colts offense. Anyway, so one thing I noticed basically first play, the edges look soft. They look very susceptible in the swing passes and the outside zone runs as well as screens. And I think a little bit of this, and it's going to kind of be a recurring theme, is the communication on the defense was a little bit off. And, of course, we lost four, Seahawk Hall of Famers. Well, one's holding out to Thomas. So we've lost three guys, Chancellor, Sherman, and who's that other guy?
Are you talking about the ends right now?
Yeah. No, I'm talking about the corners. We have three. No, we only have three corners.
We got Maxie back, so yeah,
Max is back.
We're good.
Anyway, so we've lost some guys in our secondary that usually could come up and handle the run. That was one thing that Sherman did well.
They're edge setters for sure.
Right, he could come up and handle the run. But this time, anyway, what I'm talking about is the middle linebackers, outside linebackers. I think it was strong side, so that would have been right side, right?
Yeah, no, I'm specifically even thinking of that play that you're going to get to with Wright. In the broke contain on Wright, he didn't have the edge.
Right. Yeah. And then Wagner got washed out.
Wright was wrong on that play, wasn't
Wright
he?
Wright was wrong, and yeah, Wagner got washed. Moving on, Brandon Jackson, great play on 2nd and 10 on the Colts 42. He was in the right defensive end slot in the A-gap, and he got off the block and slid down, caught the running back from behind. He was still on the line of scrimmage when he caught the running back's legs from behind. It was a great play. He basically just brushed off. There was a lot of traffic. Going through there. So that was one of the great plays. So
Jackson's really flashing too for me. I mean, he's like a plus size DN. He's almost a tweener, right?
Yeah.
And he's like what we're seeing on the line as we talk, on this pod. It's like we're seeing more guys that are flexible too, like DN, DT. Are we coming back to that point where we have guys set an edge that are bigger and go inside and also just be able to be flexible outside, like the Jeffersons, Quentin Jefferson and the Brandon Jackson? And it's nice to see this, though, see this flexibility and versatility on the line.
Right, because we don't have Brandon Mebane. We don't have, like, a Red Bryant. Red Bryant could just set the edge, man. He'd just anchor the edge. Mebane set.
Yeah, 320,
Anchored the middle. So if you're going to run, you're basically having to go to C, right? Your C gaps at that point because you... Yeah. There's no way you're getting through the middle on those guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
And again, with Bennett being gone too, we're going to need a guy to be able to do, defensive tackle, defensive end, slide back and forth. And, hopefully the Seahawks will have a good enough rotation because I don't think what they've mm-hmm. got now is they got a lighter, more athletic defensive lineman. So we're going to have to go back to that rotation we had maybe 2011, 2012, 2013,
yep.
which obviously won us the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
We had fresh guys that we could put in there all the time. Anyway, moving on. Next play, 1st and 10 on the Hawks 46. So it was a great play recognition by McDougal and Coleman. This is the play where McDougal recognizes the screen pass instantaneously, and I don't know where he was set up on that.
It's almost like he kept coming up in the play when he recognized it.
Right, he kind of kept inching, and when he recognized that's what it was, he did not hesitate. And that's what you can, the difference between a hesitation and a rookie and a pro is hesitation. Yep. They think they see what's going to happen, but their brain's not telling them just go for it, right? With a veteran, this is it, go for it. right? And if you're wrong, hey, right?
It's read and react, right?
Right. Absolutely. Read and react. That's one of the things. And that with any athlete, repetition, muscle memory, man, that's what it comes down to. The other thing I liked about McDougal shooting that gap was Coleman. The instant McDougal recognized it, you could see Coleman pull off of his guy. Coleman was in corner. He was on the slot. He was a slot corner. And they were basically running out to basically block, to run a screen pass. And Coleman instantly saw the running back coming out of the backfield. And he saw Luck turning, right, turning his hips. And there was only one way he could go with that ball. And Coleman shot the gap as well.
Coleman has been so impressive. I'd have to say that trade we made last year was phenomenal.
We traded Marsh. Yeah, he made three great plays in this game. He
almost had the pick six.
Within that first quarter. Yeah, he almost had the pick six where he recognized that he was about 0.2 seconds late.
Yep.
But anyway, McDougal slashed in there, got in there, made the running back change his direction, and then Coleman came up, cleaned it up for a tackle for a loss.
That was a great pair right there. Those guys did their job.
That was great. It looked very, very good. And again, next play, very next play, Coleman on 2nd and 11 or 2nd and 12. And then he jumps the route. It's instantaneous. The difference between a veteran and a rookie is recognition, read and react, like Sean's saying. The instant that wide receiver put his foot in the ground, Coleman knew exactly where the ball was coming, and that was almost a big mistake by Luck. And if there had been really anybody else throwing that ball, he wouldn't have been in there as fast, and it would have been a pick six, easy pick six if Coleman can stay on his feet.
I want to add, I mentioned Coleman earlier on that trade with Cassius Marsh, or we traded Marsh away for Coleman and a 7th rounder. This trade was gigantic because honestly, Coleman's owning that nickel job. I mean, he's the best we've had in a long time.
Well, no, we traded our 7th rounder
right
for Coleman,
right.
And then we got our 7th rounder right. back for Marsh.
That's right. Thank you. That's right.
It was like Friday we traded to get Coleman, and then Monday we.
So there's two steps to that, right? Right. Travis. Is
so basically, right. it was a straight up Coleman for Cassius.
So right. And you boil it down, and you gotta love it, right? You got a guy that had like 3 career sacks or 4 career sacks in Marsh. You like the guy, right? He's not what Coleman's gonna be.
Well, he's not developing. He was not developing in our system. Yeah. And if you can't develop in this system as a defensive end, you better be good at special teams. And he just wasn't. And we could see that when he was with New England.
He's pretty average in special. Yeah.
Right. He would get washed out so easy.
I agree. Like, he'd disappear in that pile and just get owned.
Yeah, right. He didn't have that special edge. He didn't have the vision.
Right.
And if you don't have the vision, you can't have the instincts.
So we love Coleman. I love Coleman. Travis, I'd say you probably just love Coleman too. He's made big plays in this league.
I do.
We've seen he can prove. He smells out the ball. He's had a pick six. He had one in Dallas last year. Jumped into the Salvation Army Bowl. I mean, it was.
For a comparable or comp, as we call it here, would be Marcus Trufant. So
sure.
I think those two are almost comparable. Trufant probably had a bit of a higher ceiling.
A little bigger too.
Yeah, he was a little bit bigger too. But, Trufant was a Pro Bowler, so number 23 for the Hawks, and again, he was one of the early Legion of Boom creators.
Yep. The young guys came in, and we
threw in Lawyer Malloy in there in that group, right?
So, he was the graybeard that year, mm-hmm. That's right.
He was a nickel corner, baby. Anyway, so Coleman reminds me of him. With his instincts and his ability to read plays quickly and react.
I like that comp, Travis. I can go with that, yep.
So 3rd and 11, we had a complete failure by Wagner to recognize the check down of the backfield. It was just horrible.
Which is hard to say, right? Because how often do we see that
with Wagner? And the one thing that made Wagner good was his vision. And what I think is happening, and this is kind of a knock on Ken Norton as a defensive coordinator, it's something we saw when he was with the Raiders.
Oh yeah,
the last 2 years or
it, last two, year. And it exposed him as a two coordinator.
Year. He just didn't have the ability to communicate. And what I mean by that is he didn't have the ability to just give his guys the ability to go right, because I don't think the Raiders defense had a leader like a Wagner. So what I think Norton's trying to do is come back and install that same system he had down there, because I think it would have worked and improved the communication. So I think Wagner and Norton, and even Wright being the leaders of that defense, need to step up and say, hey, just let us have at it, right? We know what we're doing.
Let the instincts take over.
Right, just, right, let us communicate. We'll go back to the old way of system, because Norton's been in with Pete Carroll for, you know, a good decade now. Carroll went back to USC, man, Norton was one of his first hires. And then when he came to the Seahawks, I remember the interview where Pete Carroll said, yeah, he was hired on as Seahawks coach, and he came to the NFL Network and did an interview, and he walked outside, and one of the first people he saw was Ken Norton, and he said, hey, I want you on the team, right? And
so he identified
Ken Norton. Yeah. Ken Norton was there, you know, from the start. So Ken Norton's one of the guys that helped build this defense to what it is today, along, obviously, Pete Carroll's system. So I'm not too worried about it, but obviously the early indications right now, there's some communication issues. So this isn't exactly a knock on Wagner. Again, they're running a base system, so I'm not too worried about it. They're going to be running, obviously, a little more advanced schemes when they get into the regular season.
Yeah, I think there were flashes, too. Like you said, it's kind of a vanilla defense base system. Didn't want to show a lot. Didn't want to show advanced packages we might have.
Well, and you don't want to be calling audibles.
No.
You know what I mean, at that point. You just don't want to run with the defense that you called, and then if there's something wrong with it, hey, make an adjustment, right?
I think we're almost deliberately forcing ourselves, like you just said, to just run the play out, let it run its course.
Right.
Instead of in a real game situation, Wagner might be calling people out and moving people around more,
right,
diagnosing before the snap.
Right.
And I think they just went, you know what, let's just base this, and let's, again, just see what happens.
Right, just go with it. Go with the call, stay in it, right? There was a few times on the field that, again, I can see right, and I can see Wagner trying to switch off. And again, they weren't able to do it.
It wasn't smooth at all.
And Luck and those running backs did a good job of exploiting that.
They did. And you made the observation, Travis, also that Wright and Wagner, so Wagner would tell Wright something. It's almost like Wright would say, oh, no, actually this. And it's like, okay, actually the way this goes is Wagner tells you where to go and you just go there.
Right.
You know?
You let the veteran dictate, obviously. And if he's wrong, then hey, it's on him.
Right, right.
It's like a third base coach that sends a guy that gets, you know, gunned down at home. It's on the base coach, man. You commit and you move, you know. He tells you to go, you do it. You know, it's like your general says charge, you charge.
It's preseason for everybody, honestly, is what it kind of looks like a little bit too. But
but
let's see what happens going into the Charger game. Obviously, this one was a vanilla base. But so we've got some more on that one, right?
We've
got some more on this guy.
Next play, 4th and 1. Wagner kind of, again, he misses the running back in the flat. And he went for, I think, 2 or 3 yards. Again, this is the lack of communication or the miscommunication between Wright and Wagner. So they were able to convert the 4th and 1. And again, this was just a halfback flat pass, so off the right hand side.
Surprising to see it that much confusion with that
kind
of play.
It is definitely. It was a critical 4th down. So again, if we could have stopped him there, they're not able to kick a field goal. Vinatieri's good, but he's not that good anymore. Again, they should have switched. Wagner should have let his guy go and took the halfback out of the backfield, and then Wagner should have switched on to this corner or the slot receiver. Maybe it would have been different. Who knows? Maybe Wagner gets burned for a touchdown. Who knows? Anyway. So next, Jefferson, fast, great play by beating his block and stopping the running back for a short gain. I think that was on 1st and 10 after the 4th down conversion. So Jefferson looks good. He was flashing quite a bit. He looks fast.
He does.
Again, his instincts are there. He's just got to trust him a little bit. I can see there's a small hesitation, but he's able to make up with it with his speed.
For sure. He's beefed up a little bit, too. I think he's in the low 290s, like 293 or something like that. So he's, again, like I mentioned earlier, he's in that tweener almost, like Brandon Jackson.
Yep.
Where these guys can come in and almost, like, set edge or, like, come inside and just be a little bit more beef in there.
Yep.
But be versatile enough to actually rush or pursue at the same time.
Right. So, Quentin Jefferson, again, 291 exactly, 6'4", 291, so good job.
He came in similar to a comp on Michael Bennett, because I think when we drafted him out of Maryland, we were looking at, you know, maybe Bennett's replacement eventually, right?
Yeah.
And that was the vision, I think, you know, I heard from a lot of the peeps out there. Hey, I think we brought Quentin in for this reason, and then he had some injury issues and things like that. So now I think the direction we're going with him is a little different, but he might have a different job than the Bennett role, but at the same time, he's probably going to have a significant role on this defense moving forward.
Yeah, and again, he's the guy that can slide in from tackle and on the outside because he's got the speed, and that's what made Bennett so versatile. For was sure. His ability to play on the outside and rush the passer and stay in on obvious running plays.
So seeing this kind of good play so far from Brandon Jackson and Quentin Jefferson makes you feel, or does it, or Travis, does it make you feel more confident about the depth of the D-line? Because I feel like it, for me, it just makes me feel a little better seeing the eye test of Jefferson looking quick at 291. I mean, that's, I wanted to see that besides for our base guys.
Right.
You know, yeah. The starters and everything else.
I think so. I think one of the weaknesses of this defensive line is going to be the ability to rush the passer.
Right.
Because I don't remember seeing Luck get hit. So.
Right. Yep.
That's an issue, especially in a base defense against a base offense. You kind of know what they're doing.
Yeah.
I think that comes from the fact that we don't have anchors on the line to be able to take double teams. So last year we had Richardson was double teamed, right, all the time, and then you had Bennett that was double teamed. So
it was opening it all up.
It opens up the gaps to come up. You know what I mean? And even it opens up the A and the B gaps for the linebackers.
See,
to come
up. Bobby, Bobby would shoot those gaps.
Right, all Bobby day was long. Doing that great job last year. And you know, even the strong safety McDougal would come in.
Yeah.
Every once in a while. Okay, so moving on, Wagner coming up on a 3rd and 3, great vision, he stuffed Luck.
Yeah, that was B-Wags all the way right there.
Yeah, B-Wags recognized it. This was again, obviously if he gets some behind the line, it's a sack. I would call it a covered sack just because Luck came back, dropped back, set, I think it was a 3-step drop. Wagner instantly knew that everybody was covered and that Luck was his guy. There was no running back. Running back was engaged in a block, I believe. Yeah. So on that play, maybe they went with the no back set, but and again Wagner, this is
flat was covered though, whatever it was,
right? And yeah, you know, so Wagner recognized like, hey, Luck's got to run at this point, so he came up, made the play. It was a great play, man. It was got him. I think they only gained 1 yard. Luck gained 1 yard from that one. So you know, and obviously the next play, I believe, was the field goal. So,
It was a nice, it stopped the drive and it let our first series on defense be a decent play, even though we had some confusion there with communication and things like that and knocking the rust off and hey, here we go with the preseason. So it wasn't a horrible showing on that first,
right. Series. So yeah, that was a shotgun Luck scrambles left first to Seattle 15 for a 1 yard gain. So again, that was 3rd and 3, which made it 4th and 2. And so they went ahead and obviously kicked the field goal on the next play. So that was the first drive by the Indianapolis Colts. Again, we talked obviously about the Seahawks defense. That was the most important thing. Although I will say it's good to see Luck out there throwing the ball again.
Oh, he's great for the league. Yeah,
he is great for the league. I mean, you know. And anybody wants to follow his Twitter handle, I think it's Colonel... Andrew Luck. It's a great Twitter handle. It's hilarious.
It's so funny.
Check it out if you're on Twitter. Colonel or Captain. Captain Luck, anyway.
I can't remember, honestly, Travis, but it's one of those. And it is hilarious. So funny.
If you Google it, you'll recognize it really quickly.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome when you read this stuff.
Yeah, it's no kidding.
Hilarious.
They called it out. I think I think Brock Hewitt called it out during the broadcast.
Yeah.
And then I saw somebody else on Facebook say something about it, and so I checked it out. It was hilarious. This guy created that account like 3 years ago. Waiting for Luck to come back, waiting for Luck. And, I mean, he stuck it out, right? So, kudos to the owner of that Twitter handle. Waiting for Luck to come back off of injury.
Good stuff.
All right, so moving on to the first offensive drive from the Seattle Seahawks. 9:22 in the first quarter. So, obviously, the Colts had the ball for the first 5 minutes and 38 seconds, which was a good drive by them. So again, 1st and 10, by Wilson on the Seattle 25 after the touchback. Wilson came off the right hand side, scrambled. He got out of the pocket a little early as far as I was concerned.
Mm-hmm.
He got out into the, open, no one in front of him. I think the nearest guy was 10 yards in front of him. There was two guys that like one at 13 and one at 15. Off on his right, on the right sideline was, Lockett. Hockett was wide open, and Wilson looked right at him, and I think Wilson's got to be able to take the next step in his progression. He's got to recognize that Lockett is a much better runner than he is. You know, Lockett's a punt returner, kick returner, man.
Yeah, the stuff that he did at Kansas deadly.
Was incredible. You get him in the open field, and that would have been an open field because we would have had two of those guys blocked. Again, those defenders were covering a tight end, I believe, which was Vanette, and then I think, I can't remember who the wide receiver was. But, again, so Wilson needs to recognize that when he breaks the pocket, if there's a wide-open guy, get him the ball. And especially on early downs and first and 10, there's no need to run there. Because here's the problem. And again, it's going to come up again with the amount of abuse that Russell Wilson can take. Because that guy, when he slid, that defender could have went down and took him out, right?
Yeah.
Then we've got a concussion. Then we've got a bruised shoulder. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe we got a broken rib. Who knows what happens? I mean, anything can happen. It's the NFL. So again, get rid of the ball. Don't put yourself in that situation. We don't need. You know what I mean? It's preseason. It's the first game of preseason. Get rid of the ball. Just get it out there. Let your guys go. You know, you're the point guard. Distribute the ball and go.
I think it'd be good, too, to see indications that Brian Schottenheimer, our offensive coordinator, is really schooling up Wilson a little bit to say, you know, I understand why you're conditioned to want to jump the pocket so quick and just up, but we've got to get out of that. You've got to trust your line. You've got to be able to stand in there when it's appropriate, and this will make you a better quarterback.
Yep.
And this reminds me of a few years ago. I remember that run that Wilson went on the second half of the year was just owning everyone.
Yep.
And he and Baldwin, like, it was a touchdown every week or two touchdowns.
Yep.
He would sit in the pocket, wait, everyone did their job, and he was just torching the defense.
Yep.
So, run when it's appropriate, but at the same time, I have to worry, Travis, at the same time that we're dealing with the height of Wilson. And that always haunts us, right?
Yeah.
That 5'10 and 5'8, you know, you can't coach it.
If he was 6'2... Does he stay in the pocket and make the throw?
If he's Aaron Rodgers, right? Let's use Aaron Rodgers. Is he Aaron Rodgers if he's 6'2", right? Because that's Aaron Rodgers. So we won't know that, will we? We won't know.
No.
The only thing I can say about the analysis of Wilson and the way he throws and his mechanics is they say his release point's approximately a guy that's 6'2". So it's a bit higher, but that doesn't mean his eyes are higher. So he's still not seeing over where he needs to see. And that's evident that we've got that physical issue. Every week. So he's got to move to see the lanes.
And this is going to come down, again, to the offensive line.
Yeah.
It always comes back to the offensive line with Wilson. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, we won the Super Bowl. We had a great offensive line. That line did a great job. Okung, Carpenter, Unger, who was our right tackle? Sweezy. And then our right guard was Sweezy. And then Giacomini, right tackle.
Right.
Love that guy.
Yeah.
Breno, man.
He had that big cigar at the parade.
Yeah, he was awesome. I love that guy, man.
Yeah, what a mean streak, right?
The unibrow, man.
Mm-hmm.
He was a little crazy first off. Get those 15-yard penalties, but he turned it around the next year, man. He would extend plays out a little bit, block a little bit through the whistle, get guys irritated, and then obviously they'd start fouling him
for sure.
But anyway, but what that offensive line was able to do was create passing lanes for Wilson. And give him the ability to escape the pocket out the back.
We might have that line again, Travis. We might have that line that can do that.
We could. Yeah.
So, I mean,
I think Wilson's got to get over the fact that Wilson's has been conditioned, right, in the Daryl Bevel offense. You guys know how much I love him. In the Daryl Bevel offense, man, you had 2.2 seconds. If you're holding on to the ball, man, you're going to get killed.
Hey, if we're talking about the Bevel offense, we didn't see, in the series we're talking about, we didn't see a wide receiver screen.
We did not.
I was so happy about that.
Surprise.
Yeah, Travis was, I think, most excited about not seeing a screen as part of our vanilla offense against the Colts defense.
Yeah, well, the true test will be when Baldwin comes back, because that was like, that was, what was that, Hauschka that just missed that?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're watching the Bills and the
He missed an extra point, and then he just missed a field goal, so Seahawks
not Hauschka. So,
darn it. They got his backup in there. Really, he's got a competition. Okay.
He's already got the job won. Anyway,
gotcha.
Yeah, shouldn't have got rid of Hauschka, Pete. Anyway, where were we? Daryl Bevel, Doug Baldwin. So Doug Baldwin was kind of the wide receiver screen queen.
Lockett had some love on that too, but we
Lockett had a lot of love on that, man. Just throw the end around, man. Just hand it off, do something. Quit running that play because everybody knew it was coming.
If I never see it again and we do more running back screens, I'm totally fine with that.
No, if we never see it again in the NFL, we're going to see that. That's a college play. Daryl Bevel, I will say this, Daryl Bevel's got a great offensive scheme for the NCAA.
I was waiting for it. For the
NCAA. Maybe Canadian Football League, you know, but he's kind of like the Johnny Manziel of the offensive coordinators. He's just good enough to get out of the NCAA, but not quite good enough for the NFL, and, you know, even the CFL. Anyway, enough bashing on Bevel.
You're such a fan of Bevel, though. I don't even know what you're talking about right now.
I'm so stuck on that guy. You know, our wives are happy he's gone, so you don't have to listen to talking in our sleep.
Well, let's talk about one of our favorite players right now on the team. We're a little biased, but how did Chris Carson look to us? What do we think about Chris?
Carson looked great. He looked like a he looked, and again I made this when we were talking yesterday in our production meeting. He looked like number 34 out of Chicago. I'm not going to say his name. I'm just going to let you look that up. Number 34 out of Chicago. He might have been a pretty good player.
He was okay, I think.
Yeah, he was okay. But the size and the fleet of foot, his ability to make cuts and get the ball up the field quickly. I didn't see the one thing that he did, I'm not going to say his name, very, very well, is at the end of his runs he would turn into beast mode, right? And just start bowling people over. I think there's a run, I think, against the Cleveland Browns. I believe it's against the Cleveland Browns. But he just, you know, he makes like eight guys misses, and then he runs two guys over towards the end of the run. Anyway, so that was my first impression of Carson. I think he's the starter on this team to begin the season, and then we'll see how it goes. But I don't see him giving up that starting role. I think that Penny's going to be having to fight, you know, for change of pace.
I think this is healthy, though, for that backfield, right? And that's a healthy scenario.
It is.
Really quick, I want to say, you're talking comps. This one isn't as magnificent once everybody who needs to Google that number and team that you mentioned.
But, yeah, 34, right?
Yeah. I'm going to go with a former Seahawk player that I really liked, played in the 90s, Chris Warren. Warren was a glider back, right? He's a bigger back, like Carson. He's a little bit taller than Carson, but I think he was about 6'2". Carson's 5'11", 6 feet. But size-wise and glider, great vision, created space, kept guys away from him.
Right.
So, I mean, if that's my comp, but if we could get the same results and it was a Chris Warren type of back, we're going to be so happy.
Yep.
Now, if what you said comes to light, then we've got a Hall of Famer. But
yeah,
I just love how smart Carson seems. You know, he seems to be diagnosing everything. He seems to understand our offense right away. I mean, he was a 7th-round pick. He came in right away and just looked like a veteran.
Let's talk about that. Yeah. Why was Chris Carson a 7th-round pick? He came out last year and just took the job from Eddie Lacy. Now, I can caveat that. I could have taken the job from Eddie Lacy.
Yeah, I probably could too, actually. But
I'd have been injured real quick, but I would have had that starting role.
Let's start looking at why that is. I mean, he came out of Oklahoma State. Low tread on the tire, right? He didn't run the ball that much.
Right.
He was, and Pete Carroll likes to identify players like this. When he identified Rawls, it was the same thing for different reasons. Rawls bounced around, started Michigan, was transferred. He had limited carries. Pete Carroll likes this. Real quick, before going back to Carson, I want to mention the same thing with Penny. Penny also had low carries. At San Diego State. So this is something he looks for because he figures, you know what, if a back can go till they're 30 and I'm drafting him at, you know, age 23, I want to get that 6, 7, 8 years out of this back, but I don't want him to already have 3 years of really heavy use. So this is part of the profile that that Pete Carroll and the Seahawks are looking for out of backs, besides the obvious size and you know, height and weight thing that we got going on. But he slipped for that for a reason where there wasn't a lot of tape on him.
Right.
But the tape that they saw was tape they thought would match the offense. And right now, early indications are to me from 4 games last year, preseason this year, what Carson's doing in the film room. I'm hearing he's just doing a great job with the group. I think we nailed it. I think we may have found the guy that works well with the offense. And I think so, it just was a great draft pick.
And with the new blocking scheme that we have. it doesn't break my heart that Cable's gone.
The zone blocking scheme? Yeah.
Yeah, zone blocking scheme.
If we say ZBS, that's what we're referring to. Yeah.
Yeah, so with this scheme, I think that works well for Carson, because when Carson first came into camp last year, he had a, you know, one of his issues was that he would dance around in the backfield a lot. And a guy of his size doesn't need to bounce to dance around. Again, 6 foot, 218 pounds.
And now he's about 228.
Right. And yeah, he's much stronger now. He had 23 reps on the bench at 225 from the combine. But, you know, hands, yeah, his hands are big too. Anyway, not as big as Wilson's. Wilson's got gigantic
Wilson's
hands.
10 and a quarter hands.
Yeah, man. He's like a sheetrocker hand.
You know? Yeah, right.
So he could come up and bash guys. And I think what he was trying to do was dance around trying to be, you know, Barry Sanders back there. And I think Pete Carroll just said, listen, one cut and go. You know?
Yep.
One cut and go. And I think with this new blocking scheme, and again, I don't know the name of it. I'm not that smart, but...
Well, it's not a zone.
It's not a zone, and so I think it might be a man-to-man scheme. And, again, there's going to be holes. There's going to be three holes that he can choose from. In the zone blocking scheme, you had to look for the one hole, right? With the man-to-man scheme, he's going to be looking for holes. Now, he's going to be meeting... The issue with the man-to-man scheme is he's going to be meeting linebackers, right? So linebackers are going to fill two of those three holes, right? Yep. So A, you know, the what is it? What does it go? B gaps. Mm-hmm. So three of those holes might be filled. So one of them's, you know, so he's going to have 25% shot of making the, you know, the correct call. On his
but vision
runs.
Backs, good vision backs are
good
the ones
that
you... Good
vision backs are going to know which one, right, where the linebackers are going to be, or
that's
where
right.
the safety, if there's a safety in the box, right?
Yep.
If Wilson doesn't audible out and he stays with the run, right, that safety coming up, where's he going to be?
Yep.
Because now you've got three linebackers filling three holes and then a safety in the other one, so...
They're patient where it matters, and then they hit the hole.
And that's where I think Carson is going to excel, because he can bowl guys over. Mm-hmm. He gets low.
Finish runs.
Right, so if a safety comes up, trying to take him out, I mean, trying to get lower than Carson. Carson is so strong. His legs are gigantic.
Yeah, that leg drive is crazy.
That was one of the things, anyway, that we both liked about him. His ability to finish runs, too. Knock guys over. So moving on. So after Wilson runs for 6 yards, we have second and four. Jerron Brown, man, he had weak coverage, man. The cornerback was like 9 yards off.
It was really
soft. It was great recognition by Wilson to notice that, and he just turned and threw the ball to him. The one thing I liked about this play, and again, it was weak cover, so he's going to make a catch, right, and he's going to get the first down. He just took the cornerback and just stiff-armed, I mean, right in the face mask, and just buried him.
I love
and he got that. He got another yard and a half because of that. And I like that. I like that attitude and that toughness from a guy like him, because he kind of reminds me of Golden Tate. Golden Tate could have been a running back. You know what I mean?
Oh, he was like a running
how
back.
Strong
playing,
he is,
yeah.
Right,
oh,
in the open field. And so I like being able to see Jerron Brown come out and just say, hey, no, get off of me.
You know something else about Jerron that was kind of impressive? I mean, you hear about him in camp, and then you're watching the game. He looks really big out there. I mean,
he did. He looked huge.
He did. For a minute, at the corner of my eye, I'm like, is that Brandon Marshall? No, it's not, because it's number 18. And
right.
So it's Jerron Brown, and I'm thinking, man, this guy looks like he's bigger than he is, because I think he's listed. I think Jerron's listed at 6'2 and change, and I think he's maybe 215.
Right.
But he looked like a plus size DeAndre Hopkins style player. I mean, I was like, dude, this guy looks.
Yeah, he's 6'2, 205. The way he wears pads too, with his shoulders exposed.
Yeah, yeah.
He almost looked like Mike Williams
totally.
From back in the day. If anybody remembers that guy, I love that guy. You can just throw the ball within 20 feet of that guy.
Yeah, he just catches it.
Catch.
Yep.
So again, you know, shotgun pass by Russell Wilson, the short Jerron Brown. You know, they say he was pushed out of bounds, but he just
He owned his guy, and that was great to see it.
For 9 yards. So 9 yard gain, first down, or second down and six, I think. Well, no, second and four. So coming up first and 10, Chris Carson up the middle of the Seahawks 44 for 4 yards. And this was a really good play. It didn't look glamorous. These are the yards that make a running back worth his salt. And what I mean by that is There was no open lanes.
They're not the sexy yards.
No, right. No. These are not like woohoo high stepping. You know, Deion Sanders. You know, running with his hand on the back of his head, taunting players type of touchdown run. This is 3 yards in a cloud of dust from the old school. Right, you get out on the gridiron, you give him 3 yards in a cloud of dust.
That's Pete Carroll ball again.
Yeah. Get out there and you just beat that defense up. And this is what Chris Carson, this is what we like about him. He's tough. He can get out there. The only way they kept him off the field last year, they had to break his leg. Colts.
Yep.
Anyway. Yeah. Again, this was 4 yard run. There was no, that was blocked for about a yard and a half. And again, if you guys want to know, you can go to Pro Football Focus
PFF's good to go to.
What those plays should have gone for, what it was blocked for and what the running back got. They have a great analysis there. But that play was blocked for about a yard and a half. And Carson was able to get 4 yards out of it.
So Carson was leading the clubhouse in that metric last year. I'm trying to remember what it is. It's like the yards after they get hit.
Right.
But Carson was one of the leaders in the clubhouse for his minimal 4 games. But he's that guy. He's that kind of guy.
Yeah.
So
definitely that kind of guy. So, again, he's up in the middle for 40. So, next play, 2nd and 6. Wilson pat short. Short pass to the left to Lockett for 14 yards. This was a great play. This, again, was a button hook, and it reminded me a lot of the Daryl Bevel offense.
It did. Man,
just short, quick passes. But the thing that I liked about Wilson on this pass is when he hit his back foot on the 5-step drop, he let the ball rip. He just turned and threw the ball. He didn't step. He didn't stutter. He didn't have to run around. He hit his back foot, and the ball was out. And again,
That's second baseman coming in, right?
Exactly. Yep. Field the ball. Get it cleanly. Get it in your hand. Make the throw. And the thing that's going to keep Russell Wilson from having kind of that battered quarterback syndrome from last year and the year before, taking hits so much, was getting rid of the ball quickly. Again, that was an excellent play. It went for 14 yards. It was clean. It was quick. Obviously, Lockett was open. But that's one thing I liked about it. That Wilson's working on his release. I think it was like 0.31 second release.
That's getting better, by the way.
It did, and it came out. I mean, that thing was a bullet, man. That thing had that man had a smoke trail coming off it.
And, so. And that was base offense in a way, because it's again button hooks we've seen before, even with the dreaded Daryl Bevel offense, right? That try to avoid that word, but we got to talk about it, right?
Yeah.
But I think with Brian Schottenheimer coming in, I'm looking forward to maybe extending a play like that, so the ball's located in a place where Lockett can catch it and continue to run
on his
so
way back.
It's designed,
right.
Not so that he's able to make his. Well, his skill set is, right? He's so quick in the open field. Give him a chance to make a guy miss. Right. Not that he catches it and a guy's over his back. He's going nowhere from there.
Right.
The play drops dead there, right?
Exactly. And again, that's kind of that gunslinger mentality, man. Just throw it as hard as you can into that hole. And again, we'll get back to this later on at the end of this drive and talk about why that's important.
Yeah.
So again, 14 yards. So 1st and 10, Rashad Penny, I almost called him Rashard. Rashad Penny up the middle for minus 1 yard. So again, it reminded me of last year's offensive line. These guys just got bowled over. DJ Fluker got smashed.
Yeah, he whiffed.
And so did Posick, man.
Sometime.
There was those two defensive tackles were in the backfield.
The guards were phenomenal in that play, right?
Yeah, they were great. Man, they would have fit in really well with last year's team. But no, they two defensive tackles in the backfield. And Penny's fleet of foot. He's got great speed. He's got sneaky speed. He's got a great jump cut. But there's nothing you can do when you're barely, you're basically securing the ball and you're getting hit by, a 300-pound tackle. Again, that was too bad. I would like to see Penny get the ball and be able to make some moves back there. But
even beast mode would have just gotten a gain of probably nothing. Even
right, yeah. And I think we talked about that yesterday. We were just going over some of the notes and beast mode would have been able to get back to the
drag guy another yard. There, right.
Yeah, he would have hit one of those guys and then made him pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what do we got here? Next play. So. It's not bad enough that G.J. Fluker gets smoked a tackle with a swim move. The next play, he jumps off sides, or false starts. So again, it's kind of fitting in with last year's team. Come out, make a mistake, and then compound that mistake on the very next play to put your guys in a deeper hole. So then we're going back now.
Like, oh, we've seen this before. Start.
Right. So now enforced at the end, the 43, no play. So here we go, second and 16 on the Indy 48. Shotgun pass incomplete up the middle to Nick Vannette. This was all Russell Wilson's fault. Vannette was kind of open. Was like
behind him, yeah.
And then, you know, and again, this was a comeback route. Something, you know, so new for this team.
Right.
But when he's coming back and he was leaning to give Russell Wilson a pocket to throw the ball, where if Russell Wilson would have thrown the ball low and outside, who would have had it? But he threw it high and inside, which if there would have been a better defense out there, better safeties, that's a pick six, man. That guy grabs that ball and he's gone. There's no way Vannette's catching him. There's no way Wilson's catching him. He's gone. He's just, he's running down the field.
He's to the house.
Yeah. You know, he looks like Deion Sanders, man, dancing from the 20-yard line all the way back to the touchdown, you know. And then rubbing it in your face. So, again, thank God that their defense isn't that good. Now, I'm not ragging on them. They were number 31 in points allowed last year. So, you know. So, anyway, if Wilson throws that low and outside, it's a catch. But obviously it was not. So, third and 16 on the next play on the Indianapolis 48. Russell Wilson passes short left to Vannette for 15 yards. I don't know if that was a short pass, but that's what they say it was.
Yeah, he had a little yak yards after catch, but it wasn't.
Yeah, he caught that at about 9 yards, and then he made a turn to the outside. He turned to the outside. He should have turned inside, but okay.
Yep.
Turned outside and got the ball up the field, and then he kind of committed a cardinal sin. He let the ball go. Luckily, his left knee was down with possession of the ball in contact with the defender. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we would have had a huge mistake, and then Vannette would have been on the bench for the rest of the game. But that was not so he got to keep playing. So here we are, fourth and one on the Indy 33, and again, we're going back to Chris Carson. Toughness here. Chris Carson off the right guard, to the Indy 31 for 2 yard gain. That play was blocked for maybe -1 yards.
Yeah, it's all vision there too.
And Carson just kind of, he was patient. He came up to the line, made his cut, and went off the right hand side. And he got the 2 yards. They stood him up, and they didn't actually make him tag. I think they threw him down back behind the line of scrimmage, but they didn't actually tackle him. So right. He didn't go down. So
isn't that nice to see though? Because I mean, think of the backs, like, let's use Christian Michael as an example.
Right.
He would just go, well, this play is supposed to go right. Here's a gap I'm supposed to hit. He'd run up the back of his lineman for nothing, mm-hmm. right? Carson sat back because he was patient, waited for the hole that he could choose to open up.
Right.
It does. He hits it. He gets the first.
Because he knows the guys in front of him.
Right.
So he knows. DJ Fluker is a road grader.
Right.
I mean, we think James Carpenter was a road grader on left guard spot. Right. DJ Fluker is the road grader, man. He is going, you know what I mean? He's got,
I think he's about 340 or 345, too. So
he's a big dude.
Have fun with that.
Just get in behind him and go. It's too bad if that he's on his right-hand side, because that could allow some really awesome runs if Fetty learns how to seal that outside. Mm-hmm. We're good. He gets on that left side of that defensive end.
Can you imagine the cutback and that thing's going for 7 to 10, 12 yards?
Yeah, it looks good. So, hey, fourth and one, got the yardage we needed, right? First and 10 on the Indy 31, Russell Wilson scrambles left, pushed out of bounds at the Indy 23. There was nothing there, but again, I think he... there was nothing there when Wilson hit his back foot. And, the more I think about it, they're being trained when he hits his back foot. If there's nothing there, maybe he's being trained to get out. Or my opinion is he should be trained to climb that pocket, because we've got a good interior line now with Fluker, Britt, and
Posick.
So I honestly think that Wilson needs to learn how to climb the pocket a little bit better. Because if he would have climbed the pocket, he would have noticed two guys on his right side were coming wide open. But he decided to run, and that is his prerogative, because he can. So 3 years now from now, Wilson will probably sit back and wait. But right now, he's going to make that run, which is good for fantasy football. You know,
on the other side, we're talking about Posick, right? We just mentioned him there being one of the guards.
Yeah.
He's gained 20 pounds in the offseason. It's all been muscle.
That was our critique of him last year. He just wasn't big enough.
He's just a little bit soft. And now at the point of attack, he's got a lot more strength and leverage he's getting on the defensive line. And he's pushing back. And I think he's going to work on his craft hard. I like him. I like the idea of Posick. I like the draft pick.
Well, yeah, in college he was a center. So,
he was. And so he's versatile, too. So if something happens to Britt, God forbid, something happens to Britt, though, we've got a lot of flexibility and versatility having a guy like Posick. So I don't know. I'm happy with what I'm seeing from him, especially
fingers crossed.
20 pounds, man.
Britt has been pretty solid. So, you know, he's no Max Unger, Jimmy Graham. Anyway, but Britt's pretty solid. Okay, so where are we? Yeah, you know, he runs off the left-hand side for 8 yards. So second two, Indy 23, Chris Carson just blew. And this is what I was talking about with the man-to-man blocking scheme, I believe. Someone correct me that knows football a little better than me. But there was basically 4 holes for Carson to run through. Everybody on that line had their guy beat.
Imagine that, though.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's, we're not used to that.
Yeah. So lately. I'm talking about the wrong play. But anyway. So Chris Carson went off the right guard for 2 yards. I think it was it's a little bit later. He runs for 14. It was an earlier play. I got my notes incorrect. But anyway. Yeah, Carson goes off the right guard for 2. To the Indy 31. So, I hope I read that wrong. So, no, it was right. Okay, I'm right. Yeah, it's Chris Carson, second. It's 3rd and 2 on the Indy 23. Chris Carson, right guard, to the Indy 11 for 12 yards. That's the hole where he had, you know, he basically had 4 holes he could run through.
And that was so nice to see, though. I mean, because with the vision he has and his ability, you give him that, it's.
And he's got breakaway speed. You know, he's got,
it comes up on you quick. It's interesting. He's faster than he looks.
Yeah, definitely. And it kind of reminded me of when Rawls would get into the open field. Yeah. He would just take off. And you're another like, gear. Wow.
Yeah.
So we're not used to that. I think the last guy that could break away was Alexander. And if a guy got within 5 yards of him, he would crumble. But
because Marshawn was the inverse of that. Marshawn would be, his vision was so good, he'd get to the open field and prod his way and get run down, unless it was a short run from there.
Yeah, yeah.
But this Carson's a guy that hits it with some burst and then like explodes out of it. So
he hits 6th gear and just hammers the gas. So what do we got here? So down to the 11 yards, 12 yards. So. Next play, 1st and 10, Rashad Penny off the right, and pushed out of bounds at the Indy 5 for 6 yards. This was a really great run because there was a guy in the backfield, and Penny, that jump cut,
was
jump
great.
Step, whatever you want to call it.
It was a jump cut. It was great.
It looked good. He just, you know. It would have, if he was on the basketball court, and like I said this yesterday, man, someone's shoes are laying there and there's some broken ankles because he just glided. He just looked like natural, literally going from a dead stop to a jump, moving to the right. He literally 2 yards in the air, and then he's, you know what I mean? He gets around
the edge. It's so awesome to see a guy like Penny with a jump cut like that because they've talked about it. He's 236 pounds right now. He doesn't move like he's 236. He moves like he's 216.
No. Yeah.
And so it's really interesting to see a guy that size move like that.
Yeah, because the last guy we found with a jump cut like that was Landanian Thomason. You know, he was 5'9", 5'10".
210, 205.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, he was little. That's not little, but little for the NFL for a running back.
Yep.
But he was quick. He was fleet of foot, and he could make that jump cut when he got in that hole.
LT was so good at that jump
cut. Yeah, Marshall Faulk was as well when he get in the open field. He just kind of glide and run by people. Who's the other one? Dallas back in the 90s.
Dorsett? Emmitt Smith?
Emmitt Smith had a good jump cut, too.
That we're going all the
way
back to.
That's what I was
going to
say, because he looked a little bit like Emmitt Smith a little bit, too.
Well, those are the same profile guys, too. They're smaller.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Penny's...
They were, yeah. And
that's what's so interesting. Penny's so much larger than that, but the moves
are there. Way bigger than those guys. So, well, the things that we liked about Carson and Penny is, again, they're large running backs. Not Eddie Lacy large, okay? Not 250 with a weight clause in our contract, right. But 236, just solid rock muscle. I mean, these guys, it can just leave you in awe. But anyway, so second and four from the Indy 5-yard line. It was a great play. Russell Wilson scrambles off to the right-hand side and just buries a fastball into Nick Vanette. Now, Nick ran a great route, realized that he was in the corner.
Uncovered himself.
Right. Yep. And, he was covered. Defender was in front of him. And he kind of juked him, slid around, got in front of the corner.
And then boxed him out.
Right, boxed him out. Most guys of Vanette's size would just stand back there and wait for, Wilson.
The lob.
Right, to lob it over to the corner. That's what Graham probably would have done back in the day. But Vanette knew, right, to get in front of that defender, and he slid in. He looks so natural doing that. And Wilson hit that back foot, when he scrambled out to the right. He settled down, realized that's what Vanette was doing. So they've got a little bit of a chemistry there. If you'll know, if you've been listening, Russell Wilson went to Vanette three times on that drive. So it looks to me, like Vanette is going to be the guy coming out of that tight end room to be kind of replace where Graham left. And then, that's what I think. And then I think that Disley will be the blocking tight end.
And Dixon, that's another question that we'll get to. But one thing I like about the Vanette deal is that, he had the back issues we were talking about the other day, right? And now he seems to be healthy. So he's uncovering himself. He looks quicker. And he's able to make some moves to get open,
right,
too.
So last year
was more like kind of prodding down the field.
Well, he was stiff, too, and he couldn't get down. And this was, again, Nick Vanette had a back problem last year. I don't know if it was a bulging disc or something, but it was causing him pain to where he couldn't get down into the three-point stance. So he kind of had to stay a little more upright, which is not good for blocking. You lower guy wins when you're blocking.
There's no leverage at all at that.
No leverage. So, that's the first two drives. Again, talking about, Colts had the ball first, and we talked about the defense. We went play by play. So what we're going to talk about next, moving on, is our first impressions. My first impression, again, and this is, I guess I spend way too much time talking about Daryl Bevel, but, Shawnee Wilson's passing game looked similar to Bevel's, and I'm wondering if that's where Russell Wilson's game just is. he can't stand back there like Brady and just toss it up 60 yards in the air. I mean, he can, but he doesn't have...
He has the arm. The height is an issue, too.
Yeah, the height is the issue. So I think this is a Russell Wilson that we're going to see, and the more I think about it, this is the game that they're going to play. And again, if we compare it with a good running game, it works. It makes Wilson still
His running style, his running ability becomes more dangerous.
Well, it does. Yeah, exactly. Because he
can't tee off on him anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And if he's able to get on his back foot, when he gets back on back to pass, he's got passing lanes. He's going to be able to get that ball a lot quicker, which is going to obviously make it a little bit easier for the offensive line.
So one impression I had, too, about Wilson is part of his mechanics. So I've noticed his base was almost made wider, and he almost dipped down a little bit more. So that throw to Vanette, that touchdown throw at the end of drive one, he really, planned it. Like you said, he was planting his foot, but then he squared up, lowered himself, and threw it. It was more like that second baseman mentality again. But it was a difference in the mechanics I noticed that I hadn't seen before with Wilson. It was almost like, he's already shorter, but he was part of the throw, and the base was there, and it was part of the zip.
Right.
And he put his legs in it even more.
Right.
And I'm wondering if that assists with the accuracy as well as just the zip, both of those things. And so watching that moving forward, and that was a throw in traffic. That wasn't like a deep ball. It was just got to zip it in there. So that was interesting.
Yeah, it reminded me of a little bit, if we wanted to go with a baseball reference, of Gene Segura or even Kyle Seager. When they get low.
Right, the Mariners shortstop and third baseman.
Third baseman. When they need to put something on the ball,
a little muster.
A fast guy, yeah. Yeah, they get low. And again, your power comes from your legs. So, and again, Russell Wilson's a very powerful guy. So I think, yeah, widening that base, again, is going to be give him a little more stability. And when he goes to throw that ball a little bit harder. I'd be interested to see this year what his speed is coming. You know what I mean? Speed of his balls on his short throws and his medium throws. He's got a beautiful long throw, but, you know, that's a timing play. That's not necessarily speed. So I'd like to see what those stats are.
I'm wondering if Dave Canales, who used to be the wide receiver coach, who's now the QB coach for Wilson.
Right.
Because I think Tater's still there, Carl Smith, but I think Canales is taking over.
Right.
I think it has something to do with it. Maybe Canales, I mean, I don't know. We've seen more moving forward. It's just been one game, but I wonder if there's some things there that they've been working on that they're changing up some of the mechanics a little bit to make him even better.
Yeah. You know? It could be. And again, if he's going to progress, he's going to have to get his mechanics down. When you are the height that he is, Drew Brees, you know, Wilson, now Baker Mayfield is in there too, under that kind of height category.
Yeah.
You have to do everything else perfect because, you know, to be able to keep up. You don't have the...
you have a vision impairment, honestly.
Right. You don't have the luxury. And again, though, if he's 6'2", your average line, your offensive lineman is about 6'3", 6'4". You're going to be able to see over them anyway, but you're going to be able to kind of, you know what I mean, be able to see helmets at that point, right? Yeah.
An inch instead of 4 inches is a big deal.
It is. So, if you've got everything down, right, your mechanics are improving. And again, you put Wilson out there with improved mechanics and ability, then obviously he's going to be that much better. And it reminded me a little bit of that throw looked like Brett Favre. And if you ask anybody, catching a Brett Favre fastball, it broke fingers. Sterling Sharp broke his finger. I think it was the first practice.
That story.
Yeah, man, just took his ring finger out. He just taped it up to his pinky and just kept going. But they would talk about that ball. And I was listening to 710 ESPN, and they said, and Van Nett said, that thing had smoke coming off it.
Yeah.
He goes, there was no way that thing was going to be intercepted.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked great. I mean, it was right in, it was perfect. It was just perfect. It was the type of throw that he should have thrown on that one where he threw it behind him on the dig route. But
it's almost like he learned from that because that throw came later. He's like, you know what?
Yeah.
We're really going to plant. We're really going to
squirt
out
here. Well, yeah, because he kind of threw that one on the run.
Right.
Right. He kind of threw it. He crossed himself up that time.
And remember, that comes from Wilson's confidence in his baseball background because in baseball, you throw from different angles across your body, sidearm, over, you know what I mean? Depending on where you are.
Right.
So he has that confidence. We've seen him throw touchdowns. Last year, he had a touchdown. He threw it to Paul Richardson on the sideline to win a game.
Yeah.
Right? But he threw it almost like against all, you know, all logic of throwing a football, zipping it the way he did. He got zip on it and was like throwing away, you know?
Right. He almost looked like Philip Rivers.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Philip Rivers has got that weird mechanic kind of, he looks like he's pushing the ball off to the side.
Totally. He's more sidearm. Yeah. He's really more a sidearm.
Well, yeah. And that height though, you don't have the leverage
6'5".
Pulling on your shoulder and your elbow at that point, you know? We can talk about quarterback mechanics all day long.
Right.
So first impressions again. So going down here, the one thing I liked, I kind of skipped. So it's number 3 in line here. But anyway, the addition of the screen pass is such a welcome sight.
Oh,
I don't know how many times. And again, now there is a difference between a wide receiver screen and a screen pass.
Worlds of difference.
Worlds of difference. Screen passes are usually at or behind or just in front of the line of scrimmage. But a screen pass to a running back has 3, sometimes 4 blockers out
leads
in front.
Yeah.
Okay. A wide receiver screen comes 2-3 yards behind the line of scrimmage.
The safety's up too.
Right. And the defense is within 2 or 3 yards of the receiver. The biggest difference is, again, the running back coming out of the backfield. He's usually not covered because his guy's getting blocked out by one of the offensive linemen that's now in between the receiver of the ball and the defender.
So wide receiver screens almost drown themselves out, especially when they're predictably done.
And the reason they work in the NCAA so well is because there's only 2 guys on the field on a defense in the NCAA. They're able to run plays down like that.
Yeah, they're not sideline to sideline.
Right. The rest of them aren't going to the NFL anyway. They're going to the CFL, if anything, or maybe even the XFL.
Absolutely.
But they're not going to the NFL. So those plays work because not everybody has the speed to track them down in college. The problem with the NFL is 11 guys on that side of the ball can track that play down.
Yep.
So, again, halfback screens, fullback screens, fullback flat, halfback flat, swing passes, I want to see them all day long. And especially with Chris Carson's ability to catch, Rashad Penny, J.D. McKissick, I mean, yep. Procise.
If he can stay healthy and play against... Here. So, yeah, I mean, if we get Procise to play, like I say, against the Chargers, that'd be helpful to see him actually healthy enough to be out there, right?
He's a dynamic. He's a dynamic pass catcher.
And, we need him this year.
So, if he can be on the field at anything, you know, I think this is his last shot with the team, though.
It's got to be, right? I mean, is this year three with Procise?
I believe so. Yeah, it is year three. So,
yeah, that's brutal. That's brutal. He's played, it's like 7 games, maybe tops. And he's eligible for like 32, and he's played in like 7.
Yeah.
Something like that. Anyways, it's not good.
Yeah. His percentage of being on the field is not a good sign. Okay. So, running game obviously looks good. Looked really good, I thought. Chris Carson, Rashad Penny. Mike Davis even looked great, too.
Yeah, he had an error like 4.2, I think it was. But
yeah, it was 4.2.
Some garbage average. Time there.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah. But, Carson had, I think he was up at 6.8. So, yards per rush were good. 6.5 for Carson. 4.2 for Davis. Rashad Penny at 2. So, so the running game looked good. Again, man blocking is going to work well for this team. Again, because we have good solid offensive linemen, the zone blocking scheme works well because you're not always manned up with the same guy in every shot. So, again, I think these holes are going to be predetermined holes. So, again, that'll enable Carson and Penny to get through that hole quickly when it is there. Okay, so defense. First impressions of the defense, they look disorganized, they look bad. Again, they only gave up a field goal, so I don't know, is this first world problems? So.
Naturally, first world problems, and naturally, I think we're knocking a little bit of, there's a combination, we're knocking a little bit of rust off, we're playing a base vanilla like we talked about, and it's going to happen. I mean, we've seen it before, even with our great defenses a few years ago, you know, you just got to get into it a little bit, right?
I think so. Everybody's going to get their job, Yeah, and then we got a new defensive coordinator. Now he was a linebackers coach when he was here, assistant coordinator.
Right.
So it's not that much of a difference, but again, he did fail back with the Raiders last year. So hopefully, hopefully he can figure it out because I really like Norton. So 5 here, Janikowski. He made anybody can kick a field goal through the uprights. I'm happy.
Me too, man.
I've always liked Janikowski. He's a good kicker, man. He's got a huge leg. He's reliable, man. He got injured last year, and obviously the Raiders cut him because I don't know who was that guy.
Well, there were some cap issues. He was carrying a heavy cap for the situation for Oakland.
Right.
So I think that they decided, you know what, we're going to move on.
Yeah,
and I can't remember the name of the guy they've got over there right now, but it made sense for them on the cap again, and we obviously were in the market, so it makes sense that he's here, and we're trying to see what he has left.
I think so.
And it looks like he's got a lot of leg left, actually.
He does. I think this is his job.
Yeah.
Unless something happens, knock on wood. So
exactly.
So moving on, O-line looked great. I think there was one or two mistakes. Again, the Fluker false start, and then getting blown up. He and Procise getting blown up, but that's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
To me, honestly, because if we're going back to last year with Joko and Ibushi, they were getting run over and Ifedi jumping offside. Or
yeah, they were outmatched.
They were horrible.
Yeah.
So the one thing I'd like to see though is Fant maybe slide over and take the right tackle position until Brown retires.
I would love to see that too.
Because I just don't. I mean, Ifedi's a talented guy. He's just not getting it. It's not good. So
I agree with you on that. I think one issue with Fant's going to be that Fant's used to the left side, and I know Pete's been protecting him so that he's only had him looking at him as a backup left tackle.
Right.
So he hasn't had Fant, because Fant already worked so hard last year. If you can all recall that, I mean, he was going to get that job, and then that injury
in
the preseason was devastating for him, right?
Because he looked good.
He looked great.
He was anchoring.
He looked great. He gained weight. He was like, I mean, on paper, he was the quintessential left tackle.
Yeah.
So we're excited to see his athleticism out there in space and everything else and his quick feet. But now it's like, I think Pete Carroll wants to protect him, to have him groomed behind Brown.
Yep.
And he's, you know, remember, when you go to the right side from the left, everything's opposite.
Yep.
So what you've worked so hard on, you're now flipping over.
Right.
And it's not as easy as it sounds. You can't just go, you're a good lineman, go to the other side.
Right.
So I agree with you, though. I'd love to see Fant over there. It would be a lot of work.
But, you know.
But can you imagine, though? I mean, Brown and Fant at the same time, there'd be so much athleticism on the ends. Working
so
with the guards.
They're slide step to start right off the bat.
Oh, God, yeah.
So, I mean, they get 2 or 3 yards deep.
Yep.
And then they're able to catch, you know, the defensive end. They're able to know recognize what they're going to do and then be able to
absolutely
stop it.
Yep.
If you have a short slide step coming off the line like that, guys will beat you with speed, man. They'll get around you. And again, and if you try to get ahead of them, they'll just spin to the inside and go ruin your quarterback's day. So those are my first impressions. Obviously we'll have some more with the Charger game coming up tomorrow night, since it's Friday night now. Moving on, we're going to go to standouts. So O-line gets an honorable mention. Again,
I'd say
all
that.
Of them.
Yeah.
All of them, man. Yeah.
And you know what? Brown. This is relative. Honorable mention because what have we been dealing with now for a few years?
Yeah.
Sloppy, bad line play.
Horrible. Horrible, horrible line play. And if you go back, if you go look at Pro Football Focus, if you look at our offensive line's run blocking, it was horrible. I think they were ranked 28, 29 last year.
It's always the bottom four in every category.
It's unreal. I think they were number one in penalties. But
yes. Yeah, that's the wrong number one to have. You might as well be last, right? It's the last one.
So defensive standout was Coleman. This was kind of rough for me because I thought there were some guys on the defensive line that deserved it, but Coleman made some great plays.
Yeah,
made three great plays. So that first drive, he made two of the plays, and then he had great vision and instincts, and we talked about this. So and again, Coleman, I think he was the standout on the defense. So on the offensive side, in the passing game, and again, I don't want to say Wilson, but again, Vanette looked great.
Oh, yeah.
And again, if you've been listening this far, Vanette is my pick, sleeper pick at tight end this year for the fantasy football
side. I'm pretty sure DNN called you out on that.
He figured it out. He guessed it. Nailed it. I did. I might have tipped him off, but... You know, hey, at least he's listening, right?
I know.
So, he went to him three times in the seam, a dig, come back, and then I don't know what the route was, in the spider two white banana maybe,
right?
In the red zone. So it's looking good without having Graham there to kind of a safety blanket. Vanette's going to be the guy, I think.
I really like overall what they're doing with the group, because Vanette. You say, looks good. Maybe it's going to be Wilson's security blanket this year.
Yep.
But then Will Disley was obviously identified to be kind of a Zach Miller role, where he's a really good blocking tight end, really good hands as well. And that's great. I think those two working in tandem. And I just want to mention really quick, the Dixon, having Ed Dixon, that's going to be interesting moving forward.
I think so.
What we do with Dixon based on how Vanette, is developing and continue to develop, and then how Disley
develops, because we need to have the 11, 11 formation we were talking about, right?
Right.
So, 12
personnel with a 2 tight end set. I mean, it's going to be interesting, again, because Dixon will be a cap casualty if those guys look solid, and we have to hope they stay healthy. Because
I think we could just go get some guy off the street that gets waived by another team.
Or keep Tyrone Swoops,
Tyrone Swoops, right, so move him up, right?
Fourth string now, but good athleticism, used to be a quarterback out of Texas.
Right, could play wide receiver too.
Could play wide receiver. So that, I mean...
Yeah, so that cuts out a lot of guys.
Yeah, that's an interesting group, though, moving forward to watch.
Yeah,
so.
It is. Offense, running game, Carson looked wonderful. He showed. So this was a big thing I was looking for. And again, if you guys remember 2 or 3 years ago when Rawls got his leg broken against the Ravens.
It was the Ravens, yeah.
When he came back the next season, he was hesitant. He was basically, you could look like...
Running
he was,
scared,
he
literally.
He looked scared.
Yeah.
He looked scared. He looked like he was trying to protect against that injury again. So Carson came out. He just came out. He was just ready to go. Man, it was mind over matter for him, and he was just he came out just running. So he was explosive. He was able to cut, and he was able to hit the hole, and he showed great footwork. And
he almost looks quicker than last year.
He does. And I think a lot of times what happens with these guys, and you see it in baseball and in football, when they have a major injury like that, they come back even stronger because it makes and instills a good work ethic if they come back, right? So the thing with Rawls, I think, he just didn't have that work ethic to be able to come back and be stronger and put it out of his mind. Because you get these guys that tear ACLs, and I'm going to use Adrian Peterson as my example. He came back and he was strong. He came back and ran for 2,000 yards.
That's part of his legend, right?
So within 9 months of tearing his ACL in a playoff game, so you know, those are the guys that instills a work ethic, I think, in them, because they have to go through this process of physical therapy, and it's tough, man. Physical therapy is tough. I've been in physical therapy for 3 straight years, so it is tough work. Right. And if you're gonna, you know, if you're gonna get better, you have to do it right. So I think Carson's got that work ethic, and again, the offensive coaches are just impressed with him. So, special teams, Janikowski. And again, this is a split. I want to say Delino Hill. Janikowski, obviously, we know what he is. It's not, it's not a reclamation project like Blair Walsh was.
Right.
It's not. And everybody knows the reason we won that game. In Minnesota, Walsh wide left. So, straight pull. So, Delino Hill had three hits on the quarterback. No, 3 tackles for a loss, I believe, is what we looked at. And then he had I'm giving him the strip, forced fumble on special teams. And again, I didn't hear the whistle blow. So
and you know what? And the receiver was still moving forward. So I don't know why the whistle was blown, even if it was.
Right. Right.
It just didn't make any sense.
That's going down. That's going out as a forced fumble and fumble recovery.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, for Delino Hill. So, yeah, no, he had 2 tackles for a loss.
Another thing we saw from Delino, though, was his, you know, being a newer player like that and still learning things, because he did whiff at the very end of the game, right? Yeah, he had a chance to stuff. He was there, and he missed it. But you know what? We'll take that in the preseason. That was that could be a really huge turning point for him in his career. Right.
Yep.
If he wants to turn into, and I'm not going to use this as a comp, because we all know Cam Chancellor, Bam Bam Cam, you know, right? But if he wants to be anything like Cam Chancellor was, you got to stick that.
Right.
Right?
Definitely. So a few other guys. One, just Schottenheimer play calling. Thank you. Screen passes. That's all I'm going to say. Thank you. Thank whoever you need to thank, but I'm so glad that we've got Schottenheimer. That's all I'll say about that. Stringfell looked ready for the NFL as far as I'm concerned. That dude is huge.
Physically dominating.
Yeah, pretty dominating. Yeah. And where did he come out of?
So, the first podcast I mentioned this, I wasn't sure, I couldn't remember quite right, so when he left UW, I said he went to Montana or something, I believe is what I said.
Yeah.
He went to Ole Miss.
Yeah.
And, Travis, I think you thought it was Nebraska. So, see, once you leave UW in the Seattle area, we don't know where you went, basically.
Well, you disappeared. Right?
You disappeared. You disappeared.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's where he went, but I remember when he was at UW, physically dominant player.
Mm-hmm.
He played with Siler Miles, the quarterback at UW, anyway. That seems like a while ago now, but him in that game just verifies to me, gosh, I mean, another big body receiver.
Yeah.
Intriguing. Some of the stories that'll develop now is how many receivers will the Hawks keep between 5 and 6, right?
Yeah, because he's on that bubble.
When we do
our third preseason podcast for the Seahawks,
we'll be talking rosters.
We'll be talking roster bubbles.
53, what do we think? Projections.
So if he has a good game 2 and a good game 3, I think that he might slide into that 5th spot. So who does he knock down? We'll talk about that later, but so I think Stringfellow looked good. He looked ready for the NFL, and again, I think it's good. It's good for these guys because we know Baldwin's going to be the starter.
Yeah,
No one is going to displace Baldwin, but so it gives these other guys chances, opportunities, and we talk about it all the time. Getting the opportunity, so you show in practice that you're able to, and then you get the opportunities in the games. Yep. So disappointments, Wagner, I guess, you know, he's not really a disappointment.
Kind of rust, though. I think that was mostly a rust situation.
So that, I think, well, it's a rust thing, and I think communication. So it's a new line of communication with him. And because he had Richard. Richard had been there for a lot of years. Then we had, you know, Quinn, and then before Quinn was...
Gus Bradley.
So we'd always had that continuity from coordinator to coordinator. So
I'm kind of peeling back the layers, right? They worked with each other, and the guy left, but then it was like same continuity, like you say.
Right. So we're coming back in now.
Yep.
we're missing some guys that were normally there. So Thomas, again, it's kind of a big hole, and we'll get to that in just a second. But then Sherman not being there, and then obviously Chancellor. So yeah. I mean, you had four generals on the field at the same time, including Wagner. So again, there's one general out there now, and he's got a bunch of privates running around him. So he's going to be the man. So if we can get that communication cleared up, you know, close the gap there, I think we'll be okay. And then Austin Davis, that play where he threw that touchdown or the interception in the red zone.
Yep.
He was going to
Keenan Reynolds.
Keenan. So then, again, that play just kind of epitomizes why Austin Davis isn't a starter in the NFL. And if you know anything about football, he's never been a starter. Yep. But he kind of was, thrust into that role with the St. Louis Rams. But, when he turns the corner, when he's on that, that was a called rollout, right?
Yeah.
When he turned and looked and he saw that the defender was in front of the receiver, when a veteran quarterback in that instance just throws the ball away because that was the only play. There was no tight end crossing.
You run out of green, right. too.
Now,
it's gone.
If Wilson's running that play, there was a receiver on the left-hand side of the line. But Davis didn't have a strong enough arm, and he wasn't able to spin out.
Yeah, you know what I mean, to make
that play.
In.
So
yeah.
Davis wasn't able to make that play. The one thing that Keenan did well was if you look at the tape, he looked like he gave up, but he wasn't. He was not giving up. He planted his foot and tried to give Davis a target to backdoor that corner because the cornerback would have overplayed. So if Davis would have put his foot in the ground, instead of just throwing that ball up like he was on the run, if he puts the foot in the ground and rifles it in there, there was a window behind the corner, so it would have been on the corner's right hand side.
It was a recognition thing for sure.
It was. And again, a veteran will recognize that. So I think Brett Favre would have saw that.
Oh yeah.
Aaron Rodgers probably would have saw that. Brady would have saw that. Wilson would have saw that. Maybe one or two other guys would have seen that play. So again, we're not expecting Davis to be at that elite level, but if you're going to be the backup, the one thing you cannot do is make mistakes in the red zone.
Yeah,
and that's because that was a great, great drive.
Yeah,
that second drive,
it was a good drive. Efficient.
Yeah, he was very efficient. He moved the ball down the field, but you have to finish that drive. Yeah. So anyway, moving on. So, player stories.
Yeah, so some players that stories from camp, and I'll start with a guy that actually we were just kind of talking about. So Keenan Reynolds, wide receiver, been in the league a couple of years. His backstory is Reynolds was a Navy option quarterback that was actually a Heisman Trophy candidate. He was in that group, and I think part of the reason, going back to the play we were just discussing, that he was sitting down a little bit and giving Davis a chance is he thinks like a quarterback as well and understands how that works. I mean, he went from a toe-tap route, basically on the sideline, to I'm going to sit down. This guy's going to buzz past me. I'm going to sit down. You're going to fire right in.
Right, because he understood.
Yeah, he understood it. So
that play was blown up.
Reynolds, I that's a positive for me, and he's, again, he's more of a story because he had that one play that we're recognizing in the game. But camp reports were that he's been really developing good chemistry with Wilson. He's made a lot of good plays. He's savvy. And again, I think he thinks like a quarterback. So he's an interesting project, I would call him, because, again, he's got the QB background. He's athletic. Just worthy of mentioning.
Right, but he's number 7, number 8 on the
unfortunately, chart. Yeah, Travis, he's kind of on that outside looking in.
Right.
I mean, because he's not a bigger receiver. I believe he's around 5'10". We've identified that with Baldwin and Lockett, and you see what we're doing with Jerron Browns, Brandon Marshall, String
Getting
Fellows. These guys are starting to get bigger.
Right.
So we need guys to complement Baldwin and Lockett, not guys to be Baldwin.
And that's because the NFL is moving, right? They're doing what Pete Carroll is doing, right? So when Pete Carroll picked up Browner, 6'4", right?
Yep.
Back in the day, 2011. And
revolutionized
season,
that position that way.
Revolutionized the position. These big, tall, athletic corners.
Drafted Chancellor.
Right. At the time, everybody was drafting guys like Marcus Trufant, right?
Yeah.
Smaller, 5'9", quick, get down the
exactly.
field. But so now everybody's moving, getting drafting these larger corners, larger safeties now. So we need to counter that with larger receivers. So the guys like Baldwin and Lockett work great, but absolutely. You know what I mean? You still need a guy like a Marshall, like even Mike Williams, like those guys that can go get 50-50 balls. I think Richardson was one of those guys too as well.
Absolutely.
And not to mention Case and Williams.
Yeah, no, for sure. So back on some stories and some guys. We saw this guy flash in the game against the Colts, Jacob Martin. So linebacker out of Temple, and we drafted him this year. And in the game, he had a half a sack that he shared with Rasheem Green, who we'll get to. Yep. And he had one QB hit. But what I liked seeing was his body type and his tape that way. He looks extremely athletic, and his motor doesn't stop. These are guys that can work in our system. If you remember, like Isaac Lofa-Tutupu, motor didn't stop at all, right? No. His athleticism was a lower profile. Some of you may have heard the SPARK acronyms, right?
Yeah.
Well, he was not in that anywhere near the guys at the top.
Right.
But he was a recognition, sniff a play out, and go. Read and react guy. You heard us say that earlier in the podcast. I see Jacob Martin being a combination of both, which is really cool. Read, react, does have some of that athleticism. And, you know, he's coming in about 6'2", 250. He's trying to gain a little bit of weight. I'm interested in a Leo possibility. He also, interestingly enough, has the same number that Bruce Irvin wore.
Right.
At least he played that. And so did Mingo. So both those guys, they actually swapped. I actually think Mingo played in 51 against the Colts. And I think Martin played in 59.
Yeah.
But regardless of that
old number.
yeah.
That's a cursed number.
Oh, but no. I do think Julian Peterson worked
Julian Peterson
the Seahawks,
before
so
that,
let's
yeah,
pretend
so
that
was,
because
right.
body
let's
comp.
Call, yeah.
Anyway, I like Martin.
Yeah.
Personally think that he might
Martin
be
had a QB hit too.
He did.
To go with that half
yeah.
sack. So
yeah, exactly.
He was
so
in the backfield.
Story moving forward, I think wanted to mention his name.
Right.
Let's go to somebody who we have to mention, Rasheem Green. All right. Draft pick. We're all looking at him because of Deion Jordan being unavailable, possibly
right.
going on the PUP list, the
yep.
physically unable to perform list, right? Which, if he goes on, we'll miss the first 6 weeks of the year. That's a big owie.
Right.
So Green came in. Here's his line, guys. And I don't care who you play in a preseason, who you're up against, but when you hit this line of 1.5 sacks, a tackle for loss, and 3 QB hits to go with 7 tackles from the defensive end position, guess what?
Yeah.
That's an incredible performance.
3 solos.
Yeah.
To
and
go with that.
3 solos. So that's 3 solos is even more impressive, like Travis is mentioning, because 7 and you have some assisted at a DN, but to have 3 solos means he's diagnosing and he's making the tackle.
Right.
Okay, so this guy coming in, that might be something we watch to say, wow, if Frank Clark comes in and he's the stud we all think he can be,
yep.
he's going to lead this group. Right,
yeah.
he wants to go for
yeah,
Michael
yeah.
Sinclair's sack record. But you're bringing a guy in like Green, who's, I don't know, 6'4", almost 280, right? And he's coming in, and he's going to take that maybe that other side in Jordan's stead. If he can pan out at his, you know, what is he, 20 years old right now?
Yeah.
This is some cool stuff. So
yeah,
seeing
was
that was just, you know, verifying, right? This was a good pick.
He was the 79th pick by the Seahawks in the 2018.
Yeah, this was a good
pick. Third round rookie out of USC.
Yep.
He's 21. And he's 279, not 280. Just,
oh, okay.
You know,
okay, yeah.
You know, maybe,
thanks for fact-checking me. You know, that's
well,
good
you know,
stuff.
He might have ate a heavy breakfast.
He might have had a heavy breakfast that game, or he's drinking a lot of Gatorade, so
yeah,
he got to 280 on that
yeah.
snap. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but
stay away from that Brandon Browner Gatorade.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. So I'm rolling through some more players now. Again,
right.
have to mention Shaquem Griffin. Okay? So we all said, okay, you ran the 4.38 at the Combine. We're all
so
excited
so, yeah,
about
let's
that.
Let's put that into perspective.
Okay.
4.38 by a linebacker.
Yeah.
This is not 4.38 from a safety or a corner like
that's
a
right.
Jabril Peppers, right?
Right, right?
You would expect a Jabril Peppers from, he came out of Michigan two
right.
years ago, to run, right, 4.38.
Well, let's even take
that,
it a step
good,
further.
Right?
Yeah, let's take a step further there. Earl Thomas out of Texas ran a 4.45 or 4.43, something like that.
Yeah.
And Shaquem Griffin ran a 4.38.
All right, so the difference between Thomas is 5'10", what?
Right.
2'10". 2'10"?
Yeah.
Right. We're talking about, what is Shaquem?
Shaquem's 6 and, a, and a, you know, change, 6 and
six
5 eighths or something, and he's about 226.
226 now?
Yeah.
I think he was, when he came into the combine, he was at 230-some, 236.
Yeah.
When he ran
He leaned down again for the
right,
camp, yeah.
4.43. So just, that is so fast. And when you go on so if we go 4.3 versus 4.5,
oh,
in a 10-yard, right, that's going to be a yard and a half to
yeah,
2
yeah.
yards
significant.
Quicker. Significant.
The arm length
yeah.
doesn't matter on
when
the other
you,
guy at that
if
point.
You look at those numbers, it's like, oh, well, yeah, one, you know,
yeah,
a 16th of a second, who cares?
Right.
It is, it's huge.
It's gigantic.
Literally.
Yeah, you're past
half,
the guy.
Right,
yeah.
It's 1.5 to 1.8 yards faster. And when you're talking about coverage guys, Like Wright was fast. Wright's 4.5, 4.6, I believe. Yeah. So it is fast. So I just want to mention that. That yeah, number is like 4.3. Right. Okay, what does that mean? It is fast.
So saying that, right, and we actually verified the speed. You can see it on the field. But when you have good speed, you also need to have the instincts to capitalize on the speed, right? Because you can have a good 40 and just not be a good pursuer.
Well, I think speed can make up for mistakes.
It can. I saw two things I liked. I didn't see a lot of mistakes more than I saw a lot of good pursuit. And I saw 9 tackles. I saw a tackle for loss. And he led the team in tackles. So I'm thinking to myself, with the profile that he's bringing and this intensity, what do we think about this guy? What do we think Shaquem Griffin is? I mean, Travis and I were talking about it the other day. It's like, weak outside linebacker? Or does he play safety at some point? I mean, where does this guy go? Because he's the fastest guy on the field. On the defense right now. Yep. So where do you put him? I mean, his brother would be tied for the fastest because they ran the same 40, except one is a lot lighter than the other one and plays corner.
Yeah.
So,
and again, they're twins.
So anyway, moving forward, gotta love it. You know, he was a great story. We're all everyone's in his corner, I'd say, right? Awesome story. But the fact he's proving it on the field and showing that.
Well, he's not just a story.
Yeah.
There's real. There's more to it, right?
I love this. This is great. I had some notes here on Delano Hill, but Travis had mentioned earlier he played pretty well. One of the things I wanted to say, though, is he just looked reliable. He didn't look out of place at all, and it was too bad that they blew the whistle or said they blew the whistle and he didn't get that strip fumble. As far as I'm concerned, he got it. And I bet Pete Carroll said, you know what? You got the fumble in this game. Good job.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So that, in my opinion, that happened. Okay? Not talking about him is almost a positive, where you didn't really see a lot of things that stood out to you, because that just meant as a safety, he did his job, he came up on the run, played a little box, because that's his that's his style, and then when he had to drop back and take his man, he did. And there wasn't anything noticeable in a negative way, so that's good. Another guy that's going to be really important this year, in the relation to Earl Thomas, and again, like Travis said, we'll hit that topic here shortly, Tedrick Thompson, or known as T2, he's been playing free safety, and I've heard he's gained 8 to 10 pounds in the off season, so he's running around 208 to 212 is what the reports are. He's getting his body more prepared to play free safety. And, out of the combine, he ran like a 4.6, which isn't that exciting to a lot of people. But again, like I mentioned, you can run a 40 that's 4.38, but have poor instincts, right? Or you can run a 4.6 and be quicker than fast.
Yep.
So, what's happening with T2, and my eyes are telling me he's quicker than fast, his instincts are really good, and he's coming up and making hits. This is the kind of player you want. I don't care that if he races Earl Thomas, he gets smoked.
Yeah.
Because if he's still making the same play Earl's making, but it's just a different way to get there, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
So, I'm excited about that, and we'll talk about the relation to him and Earl Thomas again at the end.
The ends justify the means there.
Yeah.
With him.
So that just reminds me now, as we're talking about the stories and some of the young guys, that what are we doing with the safety group? And looking at it, T2 to me is the free safety, right? I mean, because who else is there? We have McDougald as kind of a swing guy, but right now, based on his veteran status and the plays he is making that we mentioned in this podcast at the beginning, I think he's your strong. And I think Delano Hill is the guy that can come in to play strong if something were to happen to T2, because then McDougald could jump into that role. So to me, those are the triad of your flexibility at safety. It's Tedrick Thompson, Bradley McDougald, and Delano Hill. To me, those are the locks there. I like the youth and the athleticism. And then I'm looking at players like Lorenzo Jerome and Maurice Alexander. Maurice Alexander is a veteran who came in. He's had some injuries. We're trying to see what he can do to fit into that group. But Lorenzo Jerome's a younger guy that's been making plays. So he's gaining momentum. I think he's a name to watch. He's been mentioned by a couple other players as having a good camp. So, so this is cool. Naturally, from safety, let's jump over to corners. Trey Flowers. Travis, how did he look to you on the field when you're looking at this guy? I mean, what did you see? Who did he look like to you?
Brandon Browner, man.
Right.
Brandon Browner, but more athletic.
More athletic. Right.
Quicker hips, more fluid hips. Browner was just so stiff.
He was.
But, again,
But he used his hands. Browner used his hands a lot. He's a bully.
Well, yeah. I mean, he had long arms, too. Yeah, so you could get beat. You could beat him, but you wouldn't beat him, right?
That's right.
Because he could just catch up and just smack the ball away and just make you pay for the, you know, making a catch on him.
No
so,
doubt.
Yeah, I am really looking forward to see how he develops.
Yep.
And so he's a prototypical corner.
He is. He's a prototypical Seahawks corner, right? Right. And so everyone's, the league's all trying to do that. So I'm even more impressed that we still were able to identify a guy when the whole league is now trying to copy it.
Right.
So we see him at right corner because right now Shaquille Griffin is the left corner where Sherm used to be.
Right.
And so to me, looking at the depth in relation to Trey Flowers, it's obviously Griffin at left.
Yep.
Coleman in our nickel position. He's been fantastic.
Yeah, nickel slot corner. Yep.
Nickel slot corner. And then it's Maxey, Byron Maxwell, or Trey Flowers at right. Right. I love this competition because it now it's a veteran versus a brand new guy.
Right, Brandon Browner was there. Maxwell took over for Browner. Exactly. Right, in the before the Super Bowl, of course.
It's all coming back around.
Right now, Trey Flowers is going to come in and take
it. So, guys that know the program, and Maxey is a guy that went away from the Seahawks and was not the same player. But then back in our system again, he looks similar to the player he was.
Yeah, he signed a 3-year, $36 million deal with the Philadelphia Eagles and then washed out there.
Went to the Dolphins.
Went to the Dolphins, I think played about 8 games and got cut.
Yeah.
And came home. Last year,
he's a perfect example of the system is where he belongs.
Right, and I think that's same thing might happen to Sherman down in San Francisco.
Yep,
Sherm, he's a borderline Hall of Fame corner. So yep. I don't think he was the system so much, but I think the system made up for a lot of his mistakes. So
I could go with that.
He'll get exposed. So.
So that group overall, I could say that's interesting. We have guys like Nico Thorpe too, who are special teams dynamos. So
yeah,
he's important to the depth. He'll probably be part of the extended depth of that group. Can also
I think so too. It's critical about him is his sideshow bob haircut. So I mean, you got to have that.
You do. That's important. So Travis, I believe you wanted to ask me a specific question at the end of our podcast today.
Yeah. So I'm wearing his jersey right now. What's going to happen with Earl Thomas? Do we care what happens? Do we want to trade him? Do we want to sign him long term, or do we want to trade him? And if we trade him, what can we get for a guy like Earl Thomas coming up on his last year of his contract?
So personally, I love Earl Thomas. I think he's one of the best football players I've seen. Just because he's just crazy out there, right? He's relentless. He's intense all the way from the interview to the field. Awesome football player. But I think Pete Carroll helped answer this question because when he was talking about Tedrick Thompson the other day, he was talking about him in the same light he used to talk about Earl back in 2010, when he said, you know what? Instead of me talking about Earl, I want to tell you that I want Tedrick Thompson to be out there, and I want him to be vulnerable. And to me, when he said that, he meant, I want to see what Thompson can do when he has to be the man out there. So he wants to see what he's capable of to know if this is his guy moving forward.
Right.
And I think that also tells us that Pete knows a lot more, right, than what we're just the conjecture out there, that Earl Thomas doesn't want to be here anymore. And it's sad to say, but it just seems that way. But I think the Seahawks don't want to be bothered by that right now. I think that they know Earl's done some great things for us.
Right.
He's holding out, but we're on a youth movement right now, and I think we can't stop the momentum of that for Earl Thomas. And that's difficult. But
right, so we're not looking at the kind of final curtain call of the Legion of Boom.
Yeah.
The Legion of Boom has moved on. It's gotten, this is cast number 2, right, for the Legion of Boom. And we've got one cast member still hanging on, and unfortunately he's a Hall of Fame safety.
Exactly.
So it kind of, it's a bad position to be in, I think. And I think the Seahawks are handling it well, and I think Snyder's handling it well. So if we trade him, what do we get?
Yeah, unfortunately, the ship has sailed in some regards on trading him because we all know the stories. It followed all the way to the draft, right? And we thought maybe the Cowboys would pull the trigger, but that didn't happen. And it made you pause and think, oh, maybe they do have a role. Maybe we're good. Maybe they got a role in their sights for the plan moving forward. Maybe they'll extend them, right? All these questions come in. But at this point, his value is only dropped in a trade because other teams could say, well, that didn't happen before. Now we're getting deeper into camp. So to me, one of the natural things that might happen is during the preseason, if a team loses a starting safety that they cannot replace, or they go, you know what, we're on a run right now, we need a guy.
Hmm.
I wonder if they'd overreach and they would say, you know what, we'll give you a D-end, a really good D-end or something like that, where we identify we need some help for Earl Thomas.
So,
and not necessarily draft picks, Travis. I mean, I don't know. I like draft picks too, but okay, help me help you. It's like if T2's our guy and we feel good about depth at strong safety, Do we trade Earl Thomas and say, fine, you give us your defensive end that we can insert now to add to our depth? Because I don't know. I'm being biased on that because I personally think that's a spot we need to add.
Oh, it is. I think that's one of the weak spots on the defense right now. It is, definitely.
So that's to me what I would try to
do. We need pass rushers.
Yeah.
Okay, so Thomas is out. I mean, if he comes back, he comes back. Gives these guys some leadership on the back end.
Yeah, I think mentally we're prepared to move on. We're prepared to move on from him. And it's sad to say, but it doesn't take away what he did here and in this city and the player that he is. I mean, that'll never go away. That existed. That happened. So that was great. That's how I look at Sherm, too, you know?
Yeah, same thing. Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah. Sherm was a little bit different, though. They were going to cut him anyway, so.
Right.
You know, he did what he had to do for him and his family to get paid, so no problem with that. But
that's right.
But, yeah, Thomas is going to kind of drag out, I think. So I think the best scenario is that one team loses a safety that's thinking, hey, we're one player away from the, you know, returning. And, you know,
and we Thomas insert in our available. Defense more flexibility. Right. And we get maybe a younger guy or even a guy that's proven that he
they'll get us a fourth rounder. Would you do it?
Do I get that other player or just the fourth rounder?
Just the fourth rounder.
I would pause on that, and I would look at what am I saving again? I'd remind myself, we all know Schneider's got that on speed dial, but what am I saving myself on an Earl cut or trade?
Right, how much dead money is going to be there anyway?
I think it's pretty, we get a lot of money back because I believe he only costs, I believe his base is 10-4, and obviously we write the contract so as they go on, we're safer, right? Dropping a player, cutting a player, or trading them. I think the dead's at 1.2. Okay. I could be wrong, but it's pretty low. So it fades down.
So that's worth it then, I think.
It starts to wash out to almost be worth it. Because at this point, it's like, again, the ship had sailed on what we thought we could maximize for him. So if we get this far, maybe a fourth would be the best we'd get. I'll answer it this way too, Travis. If someone came in and said, I'll give you a third rounder, I'm probably just going to do it. For sure.
Oh, yeah. I think that's the one.
The pausing for me is just the how tough it is to let him go. But it's been a brutal offseason for a lot of us in terms of losing the Legion of Boom, right? We're letting Cam had to retire.
Yeah.
Pseudo retire, right? Because his contract and the way it works out right now.
Right.
Sherm's gone. Right. Yeah. Earl. Browner's been gone a long time and he's got issues. And then we have Maxie, who's like the only semblance of that. But again, the new guys we have like Shaq Griffin that have Shaquille Griffin that have said, I don't want the Legion of Boom to go away because the Legion is a group of guys, not just specific people. Even if we don't have the Legion of Boom again, I love that he's not willing to let go because it means he'll take a leadership role and say, no, we can still be that. And honestly, if Trey Flowers pans out, I already like Justin Coleman. I like our secondary. I do think it can be something special.
So I think we've got the guys.
Yeah.
We've got the guys that say, hey, these are the rebounds, right, off the Legion of Boom, the originals, right? We can go, hey, these guys are just as good. They're going to make us forget about these guys.
Yeah, and I've said it before. I mean, I this movement we're in right now reminds me of 2010 for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, I think,
because you throw enough, I said this before in another podcast, you throw enough darts at the dartboard, how close you get to the target, right?
Right.
To the bullseye. And, hey, we hit a lot of bullseyes before. How many we're going to hit now, I don't know. But maybe enough to survive it, get through. And we're really good at identifying these types of players. Plus, we have a lot of trust in Pete Carroll's ability to develop corners and safety.
Right. And again, the people that don't know, Pete Carroll cut his teeth as a defensive backs coach in the NFL. And that's basically where he started getting his start. So, yeah, he's
got a system. You feel more confident about it.
You know, he's got a system and he's got a technique that is like no other. So,
you know, saying all that, guys, because we're talking about youth movement, we're gonna go ahead and wrap up this podcast, and we'll hopefully see more with the youth movement moving forward in tomorrow's game against the Chargers.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, you guys. Thanks, guys. See ya.